Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Jake, no big surprise once they announced the way the interim title eliminator tournament process was going to go. Jon Moxley headed to the main event of Forbidden Door, defeating the Battle Royal winner from the start of Dynamite, Kyle O'Reilly, who was not on my top, you know, four or five list to win, but ended up making some sense. Moxley talking about the Wednesday Night Wars coming back for one night only in a promo once O'Reilly won. And then they had a banger of a match. What do you think of this process tonight? And then we can broaden that out and talk about the idea of doing the Battle Royal and giving Moxley a bye like they did after that.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, once they got the information clear and out there about the way that, you know, this is going to be decided, I kind of figured it was just Moxley because he was the just based on injuries and everything else they have going on, and the fact that they already had Hangman Page booked for a match on this show, that it seemed like, you know, he was the most likely choice just given the star power at their disposal. And so I wasn't entirely shocked to see them go with O'Reilly because he's the guy that can give you a great match, and I think they did. The main event was easily the strongest 15 minutes of the show. Even though it didn't have a lot of doubt about the outcome, they still delivered, you know, an enjoyable bit of television there at the end. I personally didn't think the Battle Royal was anything all that great. It went on forever, and it didn't really feel like it had a lot of great moments in it. But I think by the time the show was over with, the logic of how they booked their way into that main event did make some sense.
As far as who they chose to put in the main event and who wasn't in the main event, I think two of the names that stood out the most for not being in it both spoke about that. And I'm glad that they did. We can evaluate what we think of what they said, but it felt like both Hangman Page, the most recent champion, and who hasn't had a rematch, and Wardlow, who obviously just disposed of MJF pretty decisively at the last pay-per-view and has a pretty strong record, both excluded from the Battle Royal. What did you think of how Wardlow addressed that and how Hangman Page addressed that, with Wardlow shifting to wanting to restore some prestige to the TNT title and challenging Scorpio Sky, and then Hangman Page saying his focus, since he is declaring he's not going to get an AEW title shot anytime soon. Not sure where that comes from, but I guess just being excluded from the Battle Royal and not getting the Moxley spot, that he wants Okada for the IWGP title at Forbidden Door.
I thought it was all kind of a mess. I guess I'll start with Hangman Page. He acknowledged the fact that he wasn't in the Battle Royal, and essentially that's really all he had to say about it. He basically declared that he wasn't in the Battle Royal, and that his comments about the AEW World Championship would have to wait for another day, and then he just kind of trucked right along into his other comments about Okada and the IWGP Championship. And so I guess it was good that he acknowledged that there was some awkwardness about why he wouldn't be in that Battle Royal, or why, you know, the match with David Finlay couldn't have been modified, you know, after it was announced due to the injury to CM Punk. But I guess we're not going to get that information today. And then Wardlow's logic was just kind of downright embarrassing. Like, if I'm not going to pin the champ who he, you know, defined as CM Punk, then I'm not interested in it yet. And then he is interested in another belt that he acknowledged had been devalued. I thought that his performance on the microphone wasn't bad, but what they sent him out there to say was pretty dumb. And it didn't bode well for where I think they're going with him in the short term.
It felt to me like they didn't want Wardlow to lose a Battle Royal. And they didn't want Hangman Page to lose a battle royal because there's no good reason for them not to be in it. So they constructed sort of from that position, made, you know, kind of made up impromptu excuses slash reasons slash explanations for why they weren't in that match. We did actually get an explanation about Hangman not – I mean, Hangman should have been in the spot Moxie was in. But they didn't want to give – you know, they didn't want Moxie to win a battle royal and then beat Hangman because they want to save Hangman for, you know, when he gets a match against the top star. They don't want him losing, and they obviously want Moxley in the Forbidden Door main event. So to me, Wardlow and Hangman pretty transparently weren't in the battle royal because AEW didn't want them losing either in the battle royal or in the singles match main event. So yeah, we got sort of flimsy excuses that kind of sound like a fourth grader who thinks he's pretty smart about why his homework didn't get done and that he can talk the adults into believing, you know, an unlikely story if he says it the right way. And that's a little bit how this came across. I give them credit for addressing it because, I mean, we can, you know, talk about other contenders who maybe should have been in the battle royal, but at least even if the explanations were bad, they felt guilty or they felt that people would be wondering, and so they didn't just ignore it. So I'm a little torn in that respect. You know, would you rather have a lame reason or, in Hangman's case, acknowledging it but not really giving a reason as opposed to them just ignoring it? And I guess there's probably a third option out there, Jake, that's better than either of those choices. Maybe that's a false choice between those two.
Yeah, I guess I would have preferred a bit more creativity. I mean, I get what you're saying, you know, giving them the effort points. It didn't go unacknowledged in the sense that, you know, I'm sure, you know, if this were WWE, you know, they'd be very happy just to completely have you ignore everything that had happened the week before. But I think the there was a certain lack of on-the-fly creativity that went into the flimsy excuses. And it didn't make for very good television. I mean, it was very transparent that they were saying something very quickly and then brooming that away so they could move on to their next topic. I didn't get the impression that a lot of thought was put into it whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a weird week. You know, we should acknowledge the lack of acknowledgement of MJF after last week's promo. Wardlow didn't mention him, didn't really even allude to him. And, you know, AEW is just, you know, moving on either because they're legitimately mad at MJF over what he said last week and the totality of everything that went on and the unprofessionalism or the stunt, or they're in on it and MJF's in Hollywood trying out for some parts and they planned this all along, that they'd build up to this and he'd disappear for a little while and then there'd be this big comeback, unexpected, when they hard sold the idea that they were legit mad at him. Jake, let's do a little sidebar here on MJF before we move on to the next part of the show. Did it seem weird after last week's promo not to acknowledge it, or based on either scenario A or B or a scenario C of your choice, did it make sense to quote move on?
Well, I guess if, you know, either way, they're sort of keeping in the spirit of the program, because they didn't acknowledge anything that MJF said last week immediately after the promo. It was just, you know, business as usual, you know, in the kind of Jedi mind trick, nothing to see here kind of stuff from the commentary team. And so I didn't expect them to acknowledge it on air if he wasn't going to appear live on the show. And once it became clear that very likely wasn't the case, I think if he was going to appear, it would have been some kind of surprise in that battle royal to start the show.
Right.
Then it was, you know, okay, well, clearly he's not going to be appearing on the rest of the show. So there isn't a whole lot to talk about from that respect. But I think they're taking a risk. You know, it's I think these things cool off really quickly. And as you move down the branching path of telling stories with other characters, you know, you have to work on what point do you reintegrate MJF into the show? What, you know, is he going to be doing the everything I'm doing is real and all you guys are fake bums doing your stories, and, you know, that kind of, that becomes, you know, kind of ridiculous, and it makes the rest of the show a little bit odd to interpret. You know, what am I supposed to think of everybody else who is not acknowledging this while, you know, this is happening? And so I think that's really the danger of work shoots and the type of stories that MJF are doing, is that, you know, if this type of thing is happening and it's such a disruptive force to the show and the company, why aren't more people talking about it? And that becomes a danger in and of itself, because if you're not talking about anything else, then all the other characters feel like they're beholden to this one guy and his story. And so there's a lot to sort of unpack and sort there as time moves on. But I guess now my thought is he probably won't be back until after Forbidden Door at the earliest.
By the way, what is your summary of what you think the story is with MJF? Or do you think we don't know and it could be a number of things, or you don't care to even come up with a theory because, you know, what will be. Like, where are you if I do say, what do you think this was? MJF going into a work for himself, MJF being legitimately mad, and it's a legit blow up at Tony, or option C, D, or E?
Well, I guess I'm assuming that everything leading up to the no-show of the fan event was a shoot. And maybe, you know, cooler heads prevailed between Saturday and you know, Sunday, and then between then and Dynamite, to work out some way to make this fit into ongoing storylines and keep him happy. I personally have a hard time believing that they would have sold as many tickets as they did for that fan event and not only have to refund all that money and, you know, be a little bit embarrassed by, you know, the fact that they're co-promoting that with other, you know, with a building and a venue, and those people have to field angry customers and other wrestlers that were there have to stay late. Like, that kind of stuff, I mean, unless you were doing it ahead of time and, you know, MJF was suspiciously free or something. Like, I have a hard time believing that that part of it was some kind of work shoot. But when it became a work and who was involved in it and when, all that to me remains a bit of a mystery. And I'm not sure we're ever going to get completely accurate information coming out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. Well, let's pause here and introduce ourselves and give out the phone numbers and email. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, June 8th, 2022. And I am Wade Keller, the host of the program. And I'm the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows, also the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. Check out, by the way, the flagship edition from yesterday with Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net. We talked, there were a ton of stories, the CM Punk injury, the Cody injury, the Edge turn, some MJF talk, TakeOver, or not the NXT, In Your House. I know I'm leaving a couple other things off that we covered. So check that out, our Blue Logo Show. Sometimes the flagship's on Thursday. This week it was on Tuesday, and I encourage you to check that out. The other voice you hear is Jake Barnett. He is tonight's co-host. He writes for and podcasts for Jason Powell's ProWrestling.net. Jake Barnett, welcome to the co-host chair.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Wade. Always a pleasure.
Great to have you. Tell people a little bit more about what you do for ProWrestling.net.
Yeah, I guess, as you said, I'm not the owner, editor, or founder of anything, but I do contribute to ProWrestling.net, and you can check out my weekly Dynamite report over at ProWrestling.net. And I also do a couple of different types of podcasts with Jason. I'm on the .NET Weekly Audio Show, which is the flagship show that he and I do typically on Thursdays or Fridays. And I also join him for pay-per-view audio recaps live after the – well, not live, but shortly after those shows go off the air. And so if you're interested in getting information about how you can read or listen to that, you can head to pwmembership.net for member information, or just prowrestling.net for general site info.
Very cool. All right. We invite you to give us a call and join the conversation tonight. Our number is 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. I'm curious to hear what you guys think about the AEW interim title tournament and how that was presented tonight, including, as I said, the Wardlow and Hangman explanations, and also anything else from this program, including what they set up for next week. It's weird. We have a bunch of people who are on our switchboard, but nobody is flagged as having pushed one, and that doesn't happen. So I am not sure if people just don't want to talk about this show or if they're not pushing one. which is also possible. So consider yourself invited. It is a short wait if our switchboard is working as it should. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. We're also expecting to hear from an on-site correspondent, Alex, who attended tonight, and so we'll be on the lookout for him calling in. And so, yeah, we look forward to that. All right, so now the switchboard is lighting up, so I think just people weren't pushing one, and we're waiting as we conversed, which is good. I am going to tell Scott, who was the first one to hit one from Tampa, to hold, because I did bring up an email here, and it is rare we start with an email. But Josh from D.C. brings up something we talked about at the top of the show and gave his two cents on it. I'll throw his thoughts in here. He says, I hear you and your guests dance around the topic all the time. But after the Casino Battle Royal, lacking all four other ranked contenders, no Miro or Malakai Black or Chris Jericho, isn't Tony Schiavone just too stingy? We are not getting enough big matches on TV and too many guys' contracts and or get injured before we get to their big matches. I'm not quite sure if we dance around the topic. I think we talk about that, Jake. And I know Todd Martin on The Fix has talked multiple times about Tony not wanting to put big name wrestlers against each other and just have outcomes. He talked about that on the flagship last Thursday. I encourage people to check that out. Todd is a tremendous analyst. But Josh is right, Jake. There's so many matches we didn't get with Cody before he left. I don't want to blame them for CM Punk. I think, you know, they paced Punk fine. I mean, I might have done things differently than starting off the way that they did, but I think it ended up just fine had he not gotten injured, and then we would have had this summer of Punk where I think we would have had some really cool matches. Hangman Page had very few matches and very few title defenses during his, half-year reign. And, I think we get some dream matches in the tag division more often than we do in the men's singles. Do you agree with that premise? And is it, you know, Tony being stingy? Is it Tony being, scared's the word? Not hesitant, not scared, reluctant, I guess the word I'm looking for, reluctant to take top-paid guys and put them against each other until he thinks the moment is just right. And that might explain to a degree why we didn't get Wardlow and Hangman, and for that matter, Jericho, Malakai, Black, or Miro in the Battle Royal tonight, weakening it and having, the guns in the Battle Royal, but not all of those formidable names who you think would be, eager to get a chance to win a Battle Royal, face Moxley and headline Forbidden Door.
Yeah, I think there probably is a reluctance on his part to have several of his top stars look weak. I don't know why you would necessarily fear that in a Battle Royal, for instance. Like, people get eliminated by surprise in Battle Royals all the time, and nobody thinks, oh man, this guy's over with. Like, he's never coming back from this. Like, I don't think that's a logical conclusion. But I think it might be time to drop the stupid rankings, because they don't really provide any value at this point. You had Wardlow and Hangman Page, who were number two and number three, not participate for stated reasons. And then you had Adam Cole and Jay Lethal, who are number four and five, not participate for completely unstated reasons. And so I don't know what they really serve, because you had Jon Moxley jump from number four to number one between Wednesday and Friday of last week for, I think, reasons that Tony Khan attempted to explain, but they came across rather poorly and illogical on social media. And so I guess I'm sympathetic to what the emailer is saying, because there is a lack of stakes on Dynamite a lot of the time. We see a lot of six-man, a lot of eight-man, a lot of 10-man matches, which I think in large part are meant to protect the participants from taking clean losses. And I don't necessarily think you can continue to grow and expand the audience with that being, sort of the normal state of things, And now we do get more singles matches on television, but they're a part of tournaments, and they don't really affect anybody's rankings or show up on their records. And so there is a lot of dodging of important singles matchups and clean victories. And it's sort of strange, because wins and losses in wrestling only matter to the extent that they're used to improve or move somebody's character forward into the next phase of whatever story you're telling with them. And so I don't know why there would be a reticence on his part to just go ahead and tell those stories, because people are interested in seeing them, for one, and it's not the end of the road when somebody loses. You know, there's always the next match and the next story, and that can lead you somewhere else that's even better than where you started.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, let's go to our first call here. Scott in Tampa, I believe, is calling. Scott, is this you?
Yes, sir. How's it going, Wade, Jake?
Good. Hey, good to talk to you.
All right. Well, I was online and was kind of hesitant of pressing one because I didn't have anything positive to say about the show, and I just didn't want to be like a Debbie Downer of it. But I mean, you guys, the topic that you guys were talking about at the start of the show and the emailer, I agree with. It's announcing the world title eliminator series last Friday the way they did, you know, being a mess and, you know, with Jericho, and the next day them putting out the release. I wasn't interested much in it, and just knowing that Moxley was probably going to be the one who would win it all. But I was at least hoping for the finals, someone who to win the Battle Royal, to be a top star, whether it was Adam Cole or Jericho, like, or even Danny Garcia. Like, I mean, right now you have the Blackpool Combat Club versus Jericho Appreciation Society. That's like their biggest story going right now, honestly, like outside of the world title. They have Blood and Guts coming up on June 29th, which is 3 days after Forbidden Door pay-per-view. Why not, you know, continue that story by having Jericho and Mox? Like, Jericho could eat another loss on TV against Mox. Like, who cares? Like, it just wasn't much focused, you know, tonight for that. And I just wish, you guys talked about it with the rankings as well. Like, that kind of seems like pointless now, and it should just get rid of it, because it bogs you down when it's time to tell a story.
It does.
I mean, it just wasn't planned. No one could foresee an injury to CM Punk. I mean, you know, it happens. I just wish, you know, it's for one night. They could have just did something special. And I was really looking forward when, like, obviously, I felt bad for Punk getting injured, but, like, as soon as that happened, I thought, okay, now Tony doesn't have days and months to plan a story. He has to think quick, jump on his feet, and give us something special. I love Mox, and I know I wanted him to win it anyway, no matter who he's facing, but I just wish tonight was made a little special and a little different. I don't know if you guys want to react to that. You guys
for sure. For sure. I was watching the show, Jake, and just as I watched, just thinking, not so sure about AEW's booking right now. And I think Scott is right. The rankings bog them down in the sense that it's out there, it's public, and they have to answer for them. And I think it can get in the way of, I mean, it would be nice if everything was as logical as there's top five rankings and we're always prepared to utilize that and use that to justify the matches we book and who gets in certain matches. But if you're not going to abide by that, even when it's difficult or inconvenient, then you probably ought to drop the rankings. So, I mean, that along with other things on the show, and I know this is them scrambling, whatever the MJF situation was, that was, you know, he was a red hot character for years in that company. Then he cuts his promo and now we're not talking about him and he's gone. And Wardlow was diminished coming out of his win over MJF. And then he cuts a promo, which I thought was okay. I didn't watch that going, you know, wow, future star, I want to hear this guy talk every week. I don't think declaring Wardlow's world and I don't know. It was fine. It wasn't like awful, but I don't think it was like worthy of praise. And I'm just kind of watching things march out there and a new title belt and an impromptu Marina Shafir title shot with Thunder Rosa saying, I don't need to defend against anyone in the top five. I'll defend against anyone. It's like, well, why do we have a top five? And can you build this up better? If you're going to do this match, can you, you know, why not build it up so there's some emotional investment in it? And then, you know, Will Ospreay, I mean, that's a whole other topic, making his debut on the show, which I'm sure checks a box for Tony Khan going, blockbuster show, big surprise debut, major name, announcer says top 2, 3, 4 in the world. That's all true, but there's a big part of the Dynamite audience that doesn't know that, and it's just another in the line of Jay White and Tanahashi and on of wrestlers who show up, and they establish themselves outside of the AEW universe, and Excalibur's got a speed talk, a mini bio to the rest of the fans. And I don't know. I mean, I was just watching this, and it did feel like, to me, a show full of some things that AEW does well in terms of, you know, just hard-hitting wrestling, but also some amateur hour stuff. I thought the Bucks segment was like, we'll get to that. Just a little too convenient and staged and amateurish. And then, you know, some of the crutches, too many belts, too many international stars being brought in without buildup, title matches that have nothing to do with top five rankings, random matchups. Who's David Finlay? Why is he facing Hangman Page? You know, what's the story there in terms of what it means in AEW and what he means? That's barely developed. A battle royal with top contenders not included without explanation. Miro, Jericho, for example. But then, you know, the guns are involved. Max Caster's involved. So it's just, yeah, it's just, there was a lot about this show where I was like, ah, man. I think, like Scott said, the phone lines might be negative on the show tonight, or people are just withdrawn from wanting to talk about it. Jake, I know I hit a lot of checkboxes there, and I was kind of going to pace myself this show before getting to all of them so we could kind of stay focused, but I can't help it. I think this was, as Scott says, a show that didn't put AEW's strengths on display without a lot of their weaknesses showing up, at least in their booking and their presentation.
Well, I'm sure we'll touch all those topics that you kind of glazed over as we go on here. But I guess I'll isolate one just to give an example of what I think both you and Scott are talking about. And that's, we had Hangman Page and David Finlay on this show, and I think it went somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 minutes. And I believe it was about 8 minutes into the match before anybody mentioned that David Finlay had defeated Hangman Page before. And this was Hangman Page's first opportunity to get that victory back, as well as his first opportunity to, you know, to kind of come off of that loss at Double or Nothing. And it's just like, we got no video package. You got the auctioneer speed reading bio for David Finlay from Excalibur on commentary. They acknowledge that he's mostly been a tag guy. And so it didn't feel like they were even playing into their own strengths here. Like they had a story to tell, and they just didn't bother. And I think that's part of my frustration with AEW's booking as of late is it feels like they're leaving, you know, a lot on the table in terms of storytelling that if they just slowed down, took the time to do it, even if it eats into 1 minute of a televised match, you know, you can use that time more effectively to place context around things that are happening. Because so often this show feels like just a shotgun blast of stuff that so much of the audience doesn't even grasp or would probably want an explanation, even if they knew the basics of something. And we just don't get it. And I think there's, you know, whether that starts at the top with Tony Khan or whether that's other people around him, you know, just demanding television time. So he feels like he has to cram as much into these shows as possible. It's not a welcoming show to watch if you're a new viewer. And I think that's something that they have to fix.
Yeah, it's a confetti gun of happenings aimed at people who vote in the Wrestling Observer Year End Awards. I mean, and who know everything about everybody in ROH and Impact Wrestling and New Japan and the UK scene. And this was an example of one of those shows. And you can cater to those fans without leaving behind or seeming oblivious to a much larger audience. To me, I haven't even brought it up yet. I think the most egregious thing on this show was burying the lead that CM Punk is injured and there's an interim champ, and why there's a battle royal for an interim championship. That was seen by fewer, that segment of CM Punk was on a TV show Friday night, seen by fewer than half of the audience that watched Dynamite 2 days earlier. And so again, Tony Khan is booking to people who are on Twitter as much as him. And if he wants to do that, he's going to be putting TV shows on for the 12 to 20% of the public who are on Twitter half as much as him. And I mean, it's the number, I've seen stats. I mean, the number of people who are on Twitter and the number of people on wrestling Twitter, it's a small portion of your potential audience, but you've got to be following wrestling 7 days a week to not feel confused or left out. And a lot of people tune into wrestling once or twice a week, and they haven't thought about it since the last time the show was on because they got busy lives, or they're watching the NBA playoffs or NHL playoffs or baseball or going to the movies or hanging out playing poker with their friends. And this is an escape. And if you want to exclude those people, then you're going to be stuck under 1 million viewers and under 500,000 for Rampage. The lead story on the show should not have been a ring entrance for the Battle Royal. Like that Darby Allin make his way to the ring is not what you start this week's Dynamite with. You open with one of the biggest stories of the year in AEW's universe, which is CM Punk is unable to defend his title, and we have created an interim championship, and catch people up on the structure of how you're going to determine an interim champ. Maybe explain why you're having an interim champion as opposed to stripping Punk of the title. And that won't take all that long. And the insecurity that people who tune into a wrestling show are going to turn the channel to something else. If you spend 90 seconds blaming and with a highlight package, the biggest news of the year in AEW, which is Punk having to relinquish essentially, you know, his main, well, he is the main event spot at Forbidden Door and being a defending champion and go have surgery. And you save that for an aside in the middle of a battle royal where you're like, oh, we should probably mention. And then the announcers after the first match addressing it, and I don't think addressing it well, including not showing the compelling emotional footage of Punk. I'm flabbergasted. It doesn't even seem like that's an option to not do. And I can't imagine it not crossing their mind, but I can't imagine it crossing your mind and deciding not to do that. Jake, do I feel too strongly about that?
No, I don't think so. And I think one of the criticisms that you hear from the two online Twitter community about WWE all the time is that they spend way too much time doing those things. And maybe they're correct. You know, there's a lot of replays and there's a lot of over-explanation and there's a lot of assumption that the audience that wasn't watching the show an hour ago, that just joined needs another explanation. And I guess it's just competing philosophies about how the audience is absorbing information. It seems like WWE takes the approach that fans need their hands held because they might not have been watching the previous segment. Maybe they just tuned in from baseball or basketball or something else. And AEW is assuming that you know everything and that if we explain it to you that we're insulting your intelligence. And I think there has to be some kind of median there that you can hit where you're not insulting your core audience, but at the same time, you're not leaving everybody else completely walking in blind. Like, and even with the core audience, sometimes I think the expectations are too high because you saw Will Ospreay and some of the members of United Empire come out, and I think it was Aaron Hanare, Kyle Fletcher, and Mark Davis.
Household names.
Yeah, and nobody knew who they were. Yeah, Excalibur is screaming about them on commentary, but that didn't really help because they didn't have anything to say. And even the live audience in the arena seemed more confused than anything. I mean, some of them knew who Ospreay was and reacted accordingly, but everything else that happened after that, people were just kind of murmuring about. And you could really hear the audience tonight because they had the ring mics louder than commentary at times. Like, I could hear people coughing in the first couple of rows during the matches sometimes. So, you could definitely tell when they were quiet because they weren't coming through on television at all. And that was one of those moments. So, yeah, there's a lot to do here with, you know, when it comes to making this show more friendly for new viewers and maybe even a little bit more friendly for core viewers who maybe don't have, as many hours a week to put into things like New Japan and Ring of Honor and, YouTube shows and vlogs and everything else that AEW is putting out for content. I think there's just a bar that's been set way too high in terms of information gathering that's required by a viewer to watch the show.
If you're watching your favorite sports team on a Friday night and the star player goes down with an injury and then their next game is, you know, a few days later, I expect the announcers to lead with that news that the star player is injured. And I want to hear their analysis of it. I want an update on it. That's the lead story. That's not insulting my intelligence. That's not testing my patience. That's giving me perspective and underlining and emphasizing what it means and where we go from here. It's just, like I said, I mean, my jaw was dropped when the announcers got around to, oh, and by the way, in the middle of a battle royal for an interim championship. It's just, I don't find it optional. There is a vast middle ground. I think AEW is faulting further in one direction than WWE is. I do not have a problem in general with recapping segments that happened an hour earlier on a TV show where people come and go. And even if 90% of people watch the whole thing, I like announcers recapping things and reflecting on things. I think way too often in wrestling, major things happen and it's not talked about again. And it just doesn't feel important. And hearing the announcers analyze things or having a short video package that then sets up a backstage promo with someone reacting, that is not, I mean, I don't know what level of attention span we think we've devolved into as humanity, but that should not be a problem for people. And AEW doesn't have to do it as often as WWE does, but they are faulting more in the other direction than WWE is, in my opinion. I think WWE is closer to the right place than AEW because they did not mention their world championship, that CM Punk isn't champion until the middle of a match that was a follow-up to him not being able to defend the title and essentially being stripped of it or, you know, being out dormant with an interim belt. So I feel like I'm belaboring my point, but man, I feel strongly this is the most egregious example of something AEW does regularly that I strongly disagree with. Scott, you're still on the line. If you want to follow up on any of that, you're welcome to. Otherwise, we can move on to other callers.
No, I mean, everything you guys said, I mean, I agree 1,000%. I guess the one of the things you touched on it, I think, but didn't really devolve too much into it. But the introduction of yet another championship. I mean, that and the announcement of it. Like Tony Schiavone is at the desk and he's like, "What? We have something new for you fans, a new championship." And he didn't even look enthused. And I'm like, okay, great. And then, you know, you go into the video package. I'm like, okay, this is nice. Okay, maybe, you know, something they'll introduce in the fall. And he's like, coming up next is Pac and who did he face? Our Buddy Matthews. Yeah, they're facing off in this tournament. I'm like, what? a new championship for what? Like, you don't even book the world title as strong as it should be. You definitely don't book the TNT championship division as strong as it should be. And yet you think you can handle yet another singles men's belt. Like, I don't get it. That, and then the ROH championship. Like, I'm sorry. Like, if there's a lot of ROH fans out there, I know they have a legacy. I'm not one of those guys. I've watched WWE most of my life. I watched the TNA, but I followed AEW from the start based on a lot of new young guys, but a lot of the older guys too. But, like, I don't care about ROH championships. I don't care about championships from Japan, Mexico. Like, AEW, that's what I'm watching. I don't care about focus on what they have. Why another belt? I don't get it.
Yeah. All right, Scott, I appreciate it. Jake, we had a reference to the TNT title, a reference to the IWGP title, a reference to the AEW World title, a reference to the AEW Interim Championship. We had Adam Cole carrying around the belt that was awarded to the Owen Hart Foundation men's tournament winner. And we didn't get a reference to the FTW title. We didn't get a reference, I don't think, to the ROH title or the ROH TV title. We didn't get a reference to the Impact champion. We didn't get a reference to the AAA champions. But just wait till next week, you know, and we had reference to the ROH tag team titles. I mean, it is belts for everybody. And, I mean, it almost felt like a parody when they introduced that. I thought they were going to call it the Western States Heritage title. If you're going to introduce a new title, you have to explain why it exists. You can't just put little flags next to everybody and think, self-explanatory, self-evident. That's why we needed the All-Atlantic title, because we have a tournament with people from different countries wrestling for the title. So because the world championship isn't fought around the world, it doesn't represent the world, And then you have your own world title, and the ex-champion goes, well, I know there's more than one world champion, and I want the IWGP championship. The devaluation of their major singles title reached like absurd levels of parity tonight. And it was on the verge of that, if it hadn't already become that, when Kenny was the belt collector, and then you had the ROH champion being introduced. And I don't know. I mean, it was, you know, there was a level of self-awareness and self-consciousness when they introduced the TNT title, and Cody's like, it's equal to the world title. It's not a secondary title. And it's like, well, why and how? But even that's felt like pushing it. And I'm kind of shaking my head about that too, Jake. What do you have to say to what's coming?
Well, okay. So it's called the All Atlantic Championship. I don't want to be like pedantic about geography, but why are the Japanese and Chinese flags on this? They don't come anywhere near the Atlantic Ocean. And one of the matches is taking place in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And it makes no sense.
It makes no sense. Nope.
I am not. I mean, maybe it's like one of those things where it's like an inside joke, because Intercontinental Championship doesn't really make any sense when you think about it all that much. But yeah, I don't know when they decided to introduce this. I know everybody had kind of been talking about trios championships, and in hindsight,
yep,
I think I would have preferred those to this.
I would have too.
Yet another singles championship with a nebulous origin that, apparently is supposed to like be about AEW's international fan base. It was very,
as opposed to their world title.
Yeah, it's very strange. I don't quite know what to make of it. I don't know why this name was chosen or what significant. It's like the never open weight titles in New Japan, where you're just like, I don't know why this exists, but some of the matches are good, so I guess we'll just kind of persist with it.
You know how I feel about, most people listening to me know how I feel about triple threat matches. I would have preferred a triple threat singles title that can only be defended in triple threat matches. I would have taken that over the All Atlantic Championship. I mean, this was a jump the shark evening for me when it came to AW and tag belts. I'm just shaking my head, but I am, you know, facetiously and sarcastically excited to see what belt they introduce next month. Or belts. Maybe we get a women's
tag. It's becoming like participation trophies at this point. I don't know if it's like our roster is way too bloated and we have to placate as many egos as possible, so here's enough belts to go around. But it definitely makes the world title feel like it's becoming further and further in the distance in terms of importance. And I don't think that's a great place to be. I mean, you even had Adam Page I don't know if it was on purpose or just the way that that he turned a phrase, but he basically put the IWGP Championship on the same level as the AEW World Championship on their own show. And I don't know that you necessarily want to make it seem like downright inferior, but at the same time, you do want to make your champion feel like the most important guy in wrestling.
Absolutely. You have Wardlow going, I can't be bothered to wrestle for this fake interim championship. But by the way, stay tuned, because we're going to have a main event that determines who gets a shot at Forbidden Door to crown the interim champion, who I think is a fraud and not worth fighting for. I mean, and I know you were complaining about this earlier, rightfully so, Wardlow could have said, yeah, I want to win the damn interim title, because that means when Punk's healthy, I'll be waiting for him and I'll prove that I'm better than him too. I mean, it's a mess. All right, let's keep rolling through calls here. We'll go to Scott from Long Island next, then Brent from Boston is on deck. Scott, thanks for calling. What do you think of Dynamite? Feel free to defend AEW, because we're not doing a good job.
No, I refuse to. I'm from Long Island, so I'm an MGF guy, and he's the biggest babyface on earth here, and he's not on the show. And to me, he's the most interesting part of the show. So whatever's going on, I can tell you, for me personally, like, that guy's the number one draw to me, and him not being there, like, you know, after like that first segment, I was like, you know, I'll still watch, and I'll get to the other stuff later. But yeah, like, if that guy thinks he's the number one star in the company, you know, to me, he might just be that guy, because I don't want to watch if he's that really, you know, prevalent story.
The creator that MJF left last week, and then to have everybody just ignore it, I mean, I don't know why Tony put MJF on television, period, no matter what was said, after having Wardlow just squash him and essentially squash him on the pay-per-view, but to have him go out there and then say what he said and then to not talk about it, with the idea being we're just going to go on as if it didn't happen. If that was MJF trying to get fired and going too far and they're legit mad at him, which is one of the stories going around, why did he give him a live mic? What did MJF have on Tony Khan that he convinced him to give him a live mic? What bad judgment was that to either give him a live mic or not cut it sooner? And if it wasn't, if it's not that form of bad judgment, and you wanted him to do what he did, and you wanted to come out, cut him off at the end, and the strategy is not to talk about him so he can make this triumphant return at some point where the crowd will go bonkers or the lights will go out and then they'll come on and there's MJF standing in the middle of the ring. You just turned Tony Khan an AEW heel in the eyes of a lot of fans. You've undercut Wardlow's big win over MJF. And you've still got to draw this summer. And I know they weren't planning on the CM Punk injury, but you got to plan for injuries in the sense that it can happen anytime. And you're left with a show where you introduce another title to water down your belts and have people saying they either don't want to wrestle – two top contenders say they don't want to wrestle for the title that is main eventing your show and main eventing your next pay-per-view. I mean, it's a mess. It's a mess, Jake.
Yeah, I mean, even – erasing the last couple of weeks and the whole work shoot angle, MJF was easily one of the best two segments on the show week after week. And
who was the other, or was it a rotation?
I think it was a rotation most
yeah,
of the time.
Yeah.
I don't
but I'm with
think
you.
Anybody
MJF
was...
would be, if MJF's on the show, no matter what else is the best segment, he was at most number two. And most and whenever he's on the show, often he was number one.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And going into the weekend, this, you know, the Wardlow squash and whatever happened with the breakdown in communication, whether it's a work or a shoot or whatever the case may be, he was the most interesting thing on the show most weeks. And then he, you know, lit them on fire last week, and it did leave a giant crater. And I think, you know, his feud opponent over the past few months, Wardlow, who should have, you know, essentially been one of the hottest things in the company coming out of Double or Nothing, it feels like they've been cooling him off intentionally. You know, he gets a meaningless win over JD Drake on a show where MJF was the most important thing that happened in those 2 hours. And then he's involved in like a feud with a lawyer and security guards that is apparently what he's doing for the next couple weeks until Scorpio Sky gets healed up. Like it feels like whatever MJF is complaining about in terms of Tony Khan and his booking and the way that he's been treated, he's absolutely right. And if you're an MJF fan, I think you can feel justified in having that opinion. And it's a bummer because you've now created a situation where MJF is undoubtedly the thing that people were most looking forward to follow up on. And for whatever reason, you've either decided to or you can't deliver. And you're risking people who are really interested in that angle now cooling off on it and having to wait until he comes back and hoping that he can strike gold or you know, hit the magic when he returns. And it's a bad place to be. And if you were primarily interested in AEW because of MJF, whether you hated him or, you know, like the caller, you're from Long Island and you love the guy, you know, you're feeling like you're missing one of the most important aspects of this 2 hour show. And so I completely understand why you'd feel that way.
And MJF last week turned AEW heel and Tony Khan heel by saying Tony Khan is bringing in all these ex-WWE guys at the expense of AEW originals. And then this week their counter to that is to book another ex-NXT wrestler who lost the Wednesday Night War in a main event against an ex-WWE guy, although a co-founding member of the top tier of AEW and certainly doesn't have any stench on him as the next WWE guy. But nevertheless, you know, it's not, you know, the AEW originals were eliminated in that battle royal. You know, the Darbys and the Ricky Starks, they were eliminated. And then you had, you know, mid-card people being treated like mid-card people in that battle royal. So this wasn't exactly a strong answer to the accusation that seemed to go over the framing of things seemed to pop the AEW crowd last week in LA saying, yeah, MJF speaks the truth. We're on his side, Tony. I did not expect Tony Khan to be to have AEW fans turning on him, but I didn't expect him to turn on Cody either, and I didn't expect the guy who's most popular in AEW to be Long Island's own MJF on his way out the door, legit or not, for ever or for an extended period of time. Scott, back to you.
The only thing I'll say about them having a ton of titles that I do like is they're all extremely good looking. After they like redesigned like the original like TNT one, after that was just like red and that wasn't ready, and then the original women's one was not good looking, and now that's upgraded. And the TNT, I like how everyone gets their own, which is a good, you know, nice little. So, you know, even the flags on the new one, like I saw the same thing. I'm like, that's Atlantic. Like I passed social studies and geography and all that. That doesn't make all the sense. But I'll give you a good example though of the storytelling. I had a friend over just watching with me just about something else, kind of in the background, and like, you know, Pac versus Buddy was coming up, and I'm like, and they don't watch it all. I'm just like, oh, it's going to be a good match just because I know what they're capable of. And, you know, I think I watched 205 live in the middle of Raw all those years ago. Like, I know, you know, what these guys will probably do if they get time, and they haven't really gotten too much one-on-one time, obviously. So, you know, and then like an hour after that, I'm like, oh, what'd you get out of this? They're like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know who's who. But, like, yeah, that was a good match. And, like, they're like, that part, that they remember, like, certain spots. And, like, I'm going to butcher the kid's name, the Japanese. Is it Takeshita? Something like, am I ever close? Like, he's awesome. I just got introduced to him. But, you know, like, I don't watch ROH or Ring of Honor or anything else. Like, I have, like you said, like, I got the basketball game in the background now. I just had a buddy over. I got stuff going on. So, like, they've diluted their titles by having too many, and now I feel like they're doing the same thing with their roster by not just having an enormous AEW roster, but then the ROH and now New Japan. It's like, well, at some point, it's like it's good to get Miro off for a few months and then bring him back, and you could do that with Danielson and Punk, and I get all that. We talked about cycling guys, you know, WWE, but it's also, you know, when guys start disappearing for no reason or then they come back for no reason, they fight, it just, it becomes more of like, oh, well, AEW just has the good matches for no reason, and some of them have reason. It just becomes more about the matches and spots to me, and that's kind of a disappointment, which is cool. I still like that stuff, no doubt, but it's less about, you know, and that's why I like MJF so much, because it's all about story with him.
Has a wrestling company competing with WWE ever been in a good position business-wise when somebody on the air said, this is the show with wrestling, we'll leave the entertainment to the other guys? And Regal said that tonight. And by the way, if you're in the business of saying wrestling isn't entertaining, then you ought to get out of the wrestling business. Like, let's stop saying that wrestling and entertainment are two separate things. There's different forms of professional wrestling, but if you're asking people to pay money or just spend their time watching your show and it consists mostly of wrestling, you better qualify that and frame it as being entertaining. It's not – the entertainment is not separate. I know what they mean. I know it's sort of a euphemism, but words matter. And the losing companies in wrestling history are the ones who have said, we wrestle. That was the NWA, Jim Crockett Promotions motto, when the WWF was kicking their ass in the late 80s. We wrestle. And the winning motto was Eric Bischoff going, this is where the big boys play. That's when Nitro started taking over Raw. Because it wasn't about size. It sort of was, but it was, this is where the stars are. And AEW does not sell, this is where the stars are. They sell, we had good wrestling matches. Well, 205 Live had good wrestling matches, and nobody watched it. Because the audience for good wrestling matches without context isn't as high as what Regal was trying to demean in his commentary. Which, by the way, in WWE, there are actually really good wrestling matches, but they know how to frame their star wrestlers as stars. And they're doing a number of things that AEW could learn from. And I know, and by the way, I have to qualify this to keep people from freaking out. There's a lot of things AEW does that WWE could learn from. But AEW can't think that they're doing, that everything WWE does, they have to avoid doing. They need to present their wrestlers as stars. They need to give context to matches. They need to recap major, major happenings for half the audience that didn't even know what happened. And Scott, you're an example of it. And we hear from these people. There's a lot of people who don't recognize Will Ospreay and the ROH history and all that. It's holding them back. Anyway, Jake, do you want to add anything to that?
No, I think you covered it, but another aspect of that Regal line is that it requires that you understand the inside joke, right?
Yeah,
you have to know that he's drawing attention to WWE and what they define as entertainment, or what wrestling fans often deride WWE's, you know, quote unquote entertainment for being, which is, you know, embarrassing storylines like Tony Storm getting pie faced. You know, that those, you know, you have to understand what he's referencing in order to be like, why would he say that? What does that mean? And so that's another one of those things where it's like you have to avoid being to inside, whether you're on commentary or whether you're in promos or whatever the case may be. And another aspect of that is, you know, when you reference wrestling versus entertainment, well, you're not just competing with other wrestling shows. Like, you're on Wednesday nights. WWE does not compete here anymore. So you're competing with the NHL, and you're competing with the NBA, and you're competing with Real Housewives, and you're competing with everything else on television. And so if you're not being entertaining, then what are you doing? You know, like, I think there's a resistance to using that term for some reason when it's not supposed to be a bad thing. Like, you're winning over an audience that has a million other options, and not just what's live on TV networks. There are, you know, a dozen paid streaming services that are all producing original content. They have to choose watching Dynamite over all of that. So how do you get them back week after week? And if they're not sticking around because nothing you're doing on your broadcast is sticking with them, like you're not presenting anything memorable, whether it comes to characters or storytelling, then people get the impression that you're just the good wrestling match show and that they don't necessarily have to watch every week. And I think that's a mistake.
Yeah, well said. Scott, back to you for any final words.
Yeah, I think it's just like, it's interesting that it's come to, like, for me at least, you know, like when Dynamite ends, like if someone asked me kind of like, oh, what happened? Like I once had like a therapist who told me like, oh, when you're in here, like take what you want and leave the rest. And I feel like that's Tony Khan's booking style. Like, I'm going to throw 4 billion things at the wall, take what you want and leave the rest. And then like, even what you do like, it's like, well, is this going to be followed up on next week? Maybe, maybe not. Like, we'll throw 4 billion things from 9 other promotions and that every guy has a belt. And like, if I like this guy, I might see him in 6 months or I might see him like next week. It's just, it's so overwhelming that at like 10:03, if you're like, hey, what was on Dynamite? I'm like, I have to think for a good like 5 minutes before I can think of like 3. I'm like, oh, I think something's on Rampage and I don't know, like that guy spoke for 9. Like, it's just so much. It becomes overwhelming and it's a turnoff of the show for me. So that's all I got. I saw another Scott Press one, so I felt like I had to. And, you know, you said there were NHL and NBA playoffs for some of us. Not if you're fans of my team. Man, I'm a Jets fan, for God's sake. So take it easy for some of us. But, yeah, I was forced into watching tonight. But I got basketball in the background. But have a good night, and I'll keep listening, guys.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm from Minnesota, and my NHL and NBA teams got eliminated in the first round this year. Again, well, at least the basketball team made the playoffs. But, yeah. All right. Our number, if you want to join us here, is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. Don't be scared. I saw a couple of people push 1 and then unpush it. Erico 219 was one of the most recent ones. We'd love hearing from fresh voices, push back on our critiquing of AEW. We do not falsify balance on a show that I think has things that were more wrong than right. We're not going to just artificially, in order to pander to people who really want to see AEW as a home team and want them to succeed. We're not going to pander and say a show was always, 70% good and 30% bad, or divide our time that way. I think this is an example of a show. And I know they're reeling from the Punk injury and whatever the MJF thing is and trying to regroup a bit. But these were unforced errors tonight, and I think some pretty egregious errors, in my opinion. All right, we'll go to Bryant in Boston next. We got Javier, who's going to be joining us later, and we're still hoping to hear from Alex once the Rampage tapings are done, who attended in person. Bryant, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling. What did you think of Dynamite tonight?
I thought the show was overall good. I mean, it wasn't one of the stronger shows. I mean, I didn't think it was more bad than good, but I will qualify that by saying that I think all this stuff with New Japan is stupid and a waste of time because, you know, you're not taking a whole lot of time to explain it. And let's be honest, AEW has such a big roster that they should just be focusing on themselves and they shouldn't be doing this other stuff with New Japan. I just think it's a waste of time. Let New Japan worry about themselves. I mean, that and, I mean, if I were like head booker or something, I would get rid of all the ROH title belts. Those aren't necessary because it takes away from that. I mean, just wait until if you get a TV deal with ROH, which I don't know if it's likely or not, but if you do, you know, then you can offload some of that talent on there. They can do their own thing on there. But, you know, what is it called? The Mid-Atlantic title or what is it
All
called?
Atlantic.
All Atlantic. First of all, they just introduced that with like no lead up whatsoever. That was not a good idea. I mean, if you're going to introduce a new title, at least have some advertise it in advance, you know, like give it a couple weeks or a month or something, you know, we're just bringing up.
They advertised matches before they said they were tournament matches.
Yeah, exactly. And as the title as a concept, I don't have a problem with it. Just as long as you get rid of the ROH titles. Get rid of the ROH titles because, you know, normally I would say more titles is a bad thing for AEW, but not necessarily in this case because they have such a big roster. And, you know, you need something else for some of the other guys to do. But, you know, I qualify that by just saying, you know, get rid of the ROH belts. Those aren't necessary and they don't mean, well, pardon my expression, jack shit.
I disagree pretty strongly that it's okay to have another singles title because they have a big roster. I just think if they had one title, that'd be better than three. Two hits the sweet spot as long as they differentiate, you know, one from the other in some distinct way. And I think, you know, if the TNT title were specifically designed to be a championship that is defended more often on television and the world title isn't, and they kind of came up with a reason for that and a structure for it, I would be in favor of that. I'd even be in favor of, you know, certain people qualifying for the TNT title and having a kind of a set of parameters that disqualifies you from getting a TNT title shot, such as being an ex-world champion or having gotten a world title shot in the last year. And so that it does feel like it's the TNT title is for people who are working their way up to world title status. And if they go, well, we don't want to define the TNT title as beneath the world title, well, then headline a pay-per-view with it. But until you do, it's a secondary title. So why not give some parameters that make sense of why someone would go after that title or isn't qualified to go after that title? If it's a prestigious title, why would anyone not go after it? But a bunch of people aren't. But Wardlow is. So, no, I'll just push back, Ryan. I don't think because you have 60 people on the roster that you need to therefore have X number of singles titles. I think there's diminishing returns on that. But the worst case scenario is having people on the show badmouth the worth of the interim title and then acknowledge that there's other world titles like the IWGP title that you're going after instead of a deserved rematch or at least a chance to fight for the interim title. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I was pushing back on that, but is there something specific I'm forgetting that you asked that you want me to throw to Jake on?
Not particularly. I was just kind of getting an introductory thing out there. I mean,
yeah.
I differ a little bit with you on the title question. I think if you get rid of the ROH belts and that All Atlantic one is the last one you add and you don't add anymore, then it's not optimal, but you're okay. I mean, it's not to the point where you're going to start, like, driving viewers down by hundreds of thousands. But, you know, I disagree a little bit with that, but some moderation in there. But anyway,
let me throw it at Jake, because if they had defined the All-Atlantic title in a really specific way and said, you know, that this, I honestly can't come up with an explanation that shouldn't apply to their world title. But if they were to come up with something that I can't sit here and come up with on the spot that would explain why they need a title that does something that their world championship can't do, then I would be okay with it, but I would need to hear that pitch. But to just have a third singles title with a different name on it, and, I mean, as far as I can tell, the world title has top five contenders and people who have fought in tournaments and battle royals who are from other countries other than the United States. Yeah, this is not like, whoa, look at that. There's Ethan Page is from Canada, and that makes this All-Atlantic title worthy because he didn't get to fight for the American-based AEW world title before. That's only open to Americans. And, like, that's not a thing. That wasn't a thing. Miro suddenly getting a title shot isn't like, oh, finally there's a title he can fight for. Tanahashi was going to get a shot against the AEW world title. It just there's it doesn't stand for anything, and they can't explain it because there isn't an explanation, I don't think.
Well, before Killian, Jake. I just want to say one.
Or
I was probably getting
Kelly. Kelly.
I think I was.
It sounded like he had something to add there, so I didn't want to interrupt him. Go
yeah,
ahead.
I apologize.
Thank you, Kelly.
Yeah. Sorry, Jake. I think I was getting mixed up with Kelly Wells or something. I just want to say one brief thing is that I think the TNT title stature died when they, because Sammy Guevara was terrible for that. So I just think it kind of died a bit when they took it off Miro. They never should have taken them off him, at least not for Sammy.
Yeah. All right, go ahead, Jake.
Yeah, I don't think they could define what it is either. And that is a problem. Yeah. And for better or worse, you know, when you're introducing alternative title belts, you should be able to define a scope of what separates them from, you know, from your other title. Like trios titles, you know, okay, we're going to try to innovate because we know our fans really love six mans, and we think we have some trios teams that would, you know, that would be able to light it up on TV and on pay per view. Okay, I'm not a huge fan of trios titles, but I can stomach that. Like a tertiary singles belt with a nebulous purpose that's poorly explained and just dropped onto TV as some sort of fan service for international AEW fans. Like what? And talk about insulting somebody's intelligence. Like what are you even getting at here? Like it didn't seem like even Shivani or Ross had words to come up with that could have explained why this was a good idea or why we needed yet another tournament to crown a champion. And, you know, is this title going to be defended under special rules? Is it, you know, in the future, is it only going to be defended outside of the United States? Because that wouldn't really make sense either, because the U.S. flag is on the damn thing. So I'm utterly puzzled as to what is going on with this.
I was thinking while you guys were talking, what if they said, once this title is established, it's sort of like the United Nations, where the number one contenders are not determined solely based on wins and losses in AEW, like the TNT and AEW world title are, but rather a sort of United Nations gathering of top promoters from around the world who will vote, kind of like the old NWA board did on who would be the NWA champion. Like they're going to vote on who the challenger is going to be based on pitching a wrestler they think is deserving of it. And it'll be on big international stages. Like if they had like created some sort of, I mean, we can break down and go, well, does it really make sense? And is that really going to happen? And are you creating some fictional world like Pro Wrestling Illustrated would have in the 1980s that no one's buying? Well, maybe, but at least it would come across as, oh, this is different. There's a different group of people deciding who the number one contender is, and there's maybe a different set of rules, some variations in the rules. Maybe all title defenses are 2 out of 3 falls. The challengers are always somebody who was voted upon by where AEW only gets 1 out of 6 votes or 1 out of 5 votes or 1 out of 9 votes because of the promoters from around the world in Australia, Japan, Poland, Italy, the UK getting votes, Canada, Mexico getting votes too. I would have been okay with that because it would be distinctly different, but we didn't get that. And I don't think it crossed their mind to come up with it. This is just another shiny new title for somebody to walk out so that a segment seems important because someone is walking to the ring with a belt when there's many, many other ways to make a segment seem important. And ironically, you make all title matches seem less important when people are carrying around belts and others are like Thunder Rosa saying, I'm going to defend against anybody, not the people who scratched and clawed and won and earned top five. I'm just going to let someone walk into my interview and get a title shot ahead of those people who have won matches and been ranked. It was one absurdity after another. It was almost a parody mocking bad title booking tonight on Dynamite.
You know, you just kind of transitioned into one of my main points, because, you know, I'm kind of the resident caller about the women's division. You brought up with Thunder Rosa. I mean, out of all the people, you could have, like, I can appreciate a good open challenge thing, but at least let it be a segment, not like some backstage bullshit. But Marina Shafir, I mean, really? That was my reaction when I first found out that match was occurring a couple hours before showtime. It's like, the match itself, I mean, Thunder Rosa can make almost anyone look good, but she couldn't even make Shafir look good. Shafir was just so wooden. It was not a terribly good match. And, you know, I assume that this was probably a setup for some sort of angle as to who would her next opponent be. And I guess I get what I want. Toni Storm is my favorite. And personally, I don't think they should rush that match. I think they should save that for All Out in September. And I think if they do that, I think Storm should win the belt, to be honest, because it kind of downgraded her a bit with the loss to Britt Baker and that somewhat botched finish. And, you know, she has a lot of momentum and stuff. And by that point, Rosa will have held the title for about roughly 6 months. And, you know, they're not booking her that well, and it's not her fault or anything, but I think, you know, eventually you want to give Storm a run with one of the titles, and I think if they're saving it for All Out, I would say do that. Just wondered your guys' thoughts are on that, too.
Thanks, Brian. Good hearing from you again. Jake, your thoughts on the women's division as we thought tonight, and some of the specific points Brian brought up?
Well, they kind of created the TBS championship in that division, seemingly with Jade Cargill in mind. And I think having a second women's champion who has all the intangible things that Jade Cargill possesses in terms of look and star power and promo delivery and all those things did sort of cast a big shadow. And I don't know that Thunder Rosa has been able to outshine her in, I mean, obviously she has better matches on the aggregate, but I don't think her feud with Serena Deeb did her any favors, you know, or the one with Nyla Rose prior to that. And maybe it's not all her fault, in terms of how those were perceived, but she's had numerous opportunities on television to really connect with the audience with their promos. And I don't think she's gone up there and hit home runs or really even triples. And so I think there's certainly some blame that you have to lay at her feet in terms of why that women's championship has seemingly faded in respect to the TBS championship. But I am, you know, optimistic that a feud with Toni Storm could help revive things, but they actually have to do the job of telling a story. And that's the part where it's just like, can they execute? And I don't have a level of faith outside of Britt Baker and Jade Cargill that the effort is going to be put in to make that really memorable. And I wish I had a more optimistic outlook about it, but just from where I'm standing now, I just don't.
Yeah. I'd like, by the way, some backstory on Stokely Hathaway. It seems like half the wrestlers on AEW's roster, their backstory is they were underutilized and underappreciated by Vince McMahon, and we're going to show how good they are in the ring or at talking, and we're going to allude to it on commentary. That's half the roster. That's their character. Like, give us some backstory. Who's this guy? Where does he come from? Why did Jade Cargill and the baddies want him standing by them? What role does he play with them?
How did Jade Cargill fire Mark Sterling in the middle of a match without ever speaking to him? How did this happen? I love Stokely, and I think he's a fantastic performer, but the introduction was very awkward.
But being fantastic at wrestling or fantastic on the mic, being underutilized and underappreciated by Vince McMahon, is not a character. It's not a backstory. It's not a multidimensional presentation of somebody that you expect people to invest emotionally in. And there's way too much of that going on. Look who we got. Look who we were smart enough to sign. Okay? Now get in the business of turning them into stars for people who are not hung up on the idea that Vince McMahon under-pushed them, but instead saw them not pushed. And get us invested in why we should care about them when WWE pushed them in a way where we didn't. Or you can go to that small slice of the audience who are going to watch a show simply out of spite of WWE underappreciating people. That can't be 50% of your booking, and it feels like it might be. All right. I think there's anything else. Okay. I go to Javier. We've been talking about belts. I want to read JB's email from Detroit here. I liked Wardlow's promo this week. It was intense to the point. It was intense to the point and stated his mission statement for the TNT title, which I think is a good place for him coming off the MJF feud. I actually don't even mind the 20-man security guard elimination match next week as a placeholder. My question is, how will that match look? Will it just be a bunch of big spots where Wardlow is throwing security guys around like he's been doing in a complete squash? What bells and whistles AEW will pull out to make it more interesting? I don't think it's going to be Jake. I think it's going to be Wardlow, a bunch of people taking turns running at him cartoonishly while he punches them and throws them out of the ring, or powerbombs them one at a time in a sequence that comes across almost like a cartoon parody of wrestling, as most of Wardlow and the security guard spots have been. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm not even sure what the high end of being wrong entails.
So I guess we're supposed to believe that Mark Sterling somehow convinced this class action lawsuit group that rather than take Wardlow to court and get money from him for assaulting them for weeks and weeks, that they could somehow get revenge on him by facing him 20-on-1 in a match on television. Like, is he the worst lawyer in recorded history? Like, I don't understand what we're supposed to interpret out of this. Like, we're suing you, but you can, with this one weird trick that apparently no one else in the legal profession subscribes to, we can just have to sort this out with a fight on television. It's a dumb story, and it feels like such a huge downgrade from where Wardlow was, that it's like, okay, so he wants a TNT title shot. You have to give him something to do now that Scorpio Sky is out with an injury. And so you pivoted to this of all things. Like it blows my mind. I guess I also sort of push back on the promo aspect of it. I didn't think that was a lights out promo from Wardlow either. I think he shows signs of promise, but you could very easily tell that he's not a guy who's gotten a lot of mic time, and it shows.
Yeah. JB also has, right now off the top of your heads, can you tell me how many belts have been mentioned or defended in AEW canon throughout its history? I would have to guess it's quite a bit. Well, yeah, you're not guessing there. Why do we need another title? Can't we just have a named tournament between all the wrestlers of the countries that are competing instead? When seemingly everyone has a title, it really starts to devalue the titles. This includes the Owen Cup and the FTW title. Side note, some of the countries represented are in no way associated with the Atlantic, like Australia and Bulgaria. The one redeeming factor is I do like the belt design, and I do like the talent pool and mix in the tournament to this point. As always, love the show, Go VIP. Yeah, but a pretty belt doesn't justify having another belt. And yes, why is it called Atlantic? We covered that, Jake, so I won't. I don't know if you have anything you want to add to that. But
it is a very beautifully designed belt, but as you said, you know, you can just put those in trophy cases and not force us to watch them on television if that's your goal.
Yes, or you can have a tournament for a trophy and not and have it be an annual international tournament. Every country, you know, I don't know, there's an online poll and only people in that country can vote for who they want to represent. I don't know.
As an aside, is Adam Cole going to carry around that belt all the time now? Like, is that going to be a thing? Like,
probably.
Sammy Guevara did with two of those TNT belts for no discernible reason.
Yep. I mean, probably.
Okay.
Why would we think anything else? Unfortunately. All right.
I just don't understand the significance of it. It's not even something that you can defend. It's just,
nope.
You won a tournament. Congratulations. Like, you know, talk about it, but yep. I don't know why you need to carry around this giant belt that signifies really nothing that the fans care about.
I know. All right, Dean from Birmingham, Alabama, chimed in here. Dean, what's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
It felt like, you know, Oprah, you get a title shot, you get a title shot, you get a title and you get a title shot. Very confusing. I'm like reading, looking on social media, everybody's confused, and everything that you guys said, I 100% agree with you. And I don't see why they would try to put Adam Cole over Adam Page, right? That's correct.
Hangman Page? Yeah.
Yeah, Hangman Page, sorry. Yes.
Yep.
Sorry, just got a lot on my mind to say. But anyway, it's sad that, you know, CM Punk got injured and everything, but everything's like going downhill now from the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And
yep.
Anyway, I'm not surprised. I feel like some of the shows after the pay-per-views, it's just like Tony Khan is everywhere across the map. And anyway, I feel like he needs somebody to be there, like not saying this guy well, just saying as an example, he needs somebody with experience like a Bruce Pritchard or, you know, somebody who knows how to write. He needs a booker, somebody. But anyway,
yeah.
The show was everywhere. It very confusing. And also, just my opinion, I'm ready for somebody else to take on the title, beat Thunder Rosa, and move on. And then I'm surprised that I believe the Young Bucks not only had, well, maybe it was the Impact titles and ROH titles, or had the AEW Tag Team Champions and the ROH titles, or maybe been Impact, but I'm surprised FTR is not going for the AEW titles also.
Thanks, Dean. I mean, I did not expect it to be one rant and one call after another on the belts, but I also just think this was a show that justifies that level of complaining. It is built up over time between emails and calls and our thoughts, Jake. And then the way, again, what Hangman said, what Wardlow said, the structure of the interim championship, the lack of acknowledging what happened with Punk to the 500,000 people watching the show who did not watch Rampage and assuming they all are caught up on social media. And even if they're caught up on social media, wouldn't want to hear from Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone and Excalibur about the decision and maybe see highlights and have them react to it. And then you have Thunder Rosa going, I want to defend against anyone who, even if they're not in the top five and we're supposed to care about the top five, and you introduce a new title and you still have the ROH presence hovering and an Owen Hart belt. And the FTW belt is going to show up at some point, and you're going to get more references and that IWGP title reference. It is, I mean, the more I talk about it, the more it just feels more absurd. And I think it's coming through in the calls. I'm curious when we get to Javier momentarily, what he has to say about this, but I don't know, Jake. Anything you want to respond to what Dean said?
Well, I think his sentiment echoed a lot of what we, what we had said and what had also been said by other callers. There's just too much content being tossed around, too many belts, and it's to the point where all of it sort of loses significance because it's very difficult to follow and oftentimes confusing if you're not somebody who is really up to date with wrestling information. And so I think that would be my biggest takeaway from this show, is that they got to breathe, they got to slow down, they have to try to make a couple of things stick with viewers on every show that you can carry a thread forward from week to week. It can't be so chaotic and so jam-packed full of stuff that nothing sticks with the viewers. And that's a problem that I don't think started tonight. It's something that's been going on for quite a while. And I think what the caller had said about the shows that follow pay-per-views, to typically do seem to be their weakest shows. They finish up a couple of story arcs at a pay-per-view, and they really struggle to get things started again. And I'm not sure if that's, you know, just one of those idiosyncrasies of Tony Khan's booking patterns, or if they're legitimately struggling because of all of these injuries and other situations that are playing out backstage. But it hasn't, you know, tonight specifically, just it did not come across well for a two-hour wrestling broadcast.
I got to say, if Tony Khan weren't the booker and someone else was booking for him, I'm not sure that I wouldn't be calling for Tony to think about replacing his booker right now. Like, or having a long talk with him or her about shaping up. But it's Tony Khan, so the conversation is you know, different. But that might be even, you know, more concerning.
He doesn't often publicly acknowledge, you know, that he's made a lot of booking mistakes. You know, no. He doesn't talk about regrets. He doesn't talk about things he would have done differently if he had gotten a second chance. So I don't know if that's just the public face, and privately he's like the hardest guy on himself and he's constantly second guessing or whatever the case may be. But, you know, I don't know if the answer is necessarily, you know, bringing in a writing team or whatever those things that everybody in AEW seems to downplay. But, you know, he could certainly use, you know, people around him that are given more authority than they currently have to make these segments work. Because there's, you know, when you have one guy that's essentially, you know, where the buck stops and so many parts of the show feel like they're in disarray, then, you know, all fingers kind of start pointing back to him. And I don't even know whether or not he's to blame.
Yeah. I mean, the buck stops with him. He's to blame. And it's not to say that it isn't correctable, but, you know, tonight was a manifestation of concerns that I have. And I didn't see a lot of correcting of that. But and it's not just one show, but it also is just one show. You know, like, it's not like something's popped up this week and they didn't exist prior. But, you know, he is dealing with whatever, you know, fallout there is of MJF sucking the oxygen out of the room for, you know, the lead up to the pay-per-view all the way through Wednesday. And then, you know, really, you know, half a Dynamite, more than half a Dynamite in Rampage was, you know, just sort of, oh, MJF. What's happening with him? And then you got Punk relinquishing the title. Is a weird week, but they got to get back on track. And I'm not sure promoting Forbidden Door by having a bunch of wrestlers from New Japan show up with the announcer saying, "Here's the top three wrestler in the world," and that's the beginning, middle, and end of the character development of him. Because if you're not voting the Observer Awards, well, that's your fault for not knowing who all these people are. I mean, that's. It just seems like Tony thinks there's 2 million people out there who vote in the Observer Awards every year and are up on all that, you know, qualified to vote, you know, and there aren't. And he's got to bring those people in, and he's not. Okay. Let me see here. I think, yeah, okay. Javier, I know I kept saying I'm going to you. We just got our on-site correspondent joining us. Do you want to come on now, or do you want us to take him first?
You can take him first.
Okay. I didn't want to, if your night was getting long. Okay, we'll do that. So let's jump over to Alex, who attended tonight in Missouri. Alex, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, wait, no. Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Appreciate you making time for us. What's your lead story? We have spent a lot of the show talking about too many title belts in AEW, among other things. From the in-arena experience, what stood out to you?
Well, so two things. One, I had your voice in my head when they announced new championship about, you know, just the number of title belts in AEW at this point. But just, I mean, literally, so Rampage just ended a few minutes ago, so I'm just, you know, the couple minutes I caught when I called in here, is, you know, the first reaction I'm kind of hearing to the show. It's interesting. I mean, in the arena, you know, Will Ospreay got a big reaction. But, you know, I mean, I agree that it would be silly to assume that most AEW viewers have any idea who he is. I was with a few friends of mine who are more casual fans of AEW, the elusive casual fan, and they had no idea who Will Ospreay was, right? So, I could fill him in. Yeah, I'm sure that happens a lot of places, right? Oh, there's somebody who knows who he is, and he tells people, oh, you know, you got to watch this guy. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's many, many, many AEW fans who have no idea who he was.
Well, if there's 5,000 people buying tickets in the top 100 markets in the United States, and by the way, that's a massive overstatement, and all 5,000 people attending every Dynamite in the top 100 markets where they only visit once every 2 years, all these markets, 5,000 times 100 is the Rampage audience. So, you know, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, like that, having your ticket buying hardcore fans reacting to somebody, assuming it's all 5,000, not bellwether fans who, you know, or whatever you want to call them, the influencers in the crowd who, you know, pop and then everyone follows. And I'm not saying there aren't however many thousand people tonight. Most of them know who Will Ospreay is. I have said from a very early stage of Dynamite's run, it's that second million you got to start chasing. You got the first million, and you're probably going to have to do a lot to get rid of them, because there's a lot that AEW does right to super serve that first 500,000 to a million people. It's about not being self-satisfied with that you know, bringing those other people in. Anyway, go ahead, Alex.
No, I agree with you totally on that. And then this is an entirely separate subject, but you asked my headline story, and this is probably just a very me sort of headline story, but it stuck with me in the Battle Royal. There were a couple spots where, like, I can't remember, Jake Hager attacked somebody to prevent them from, like, I think he attacked at one point Darby Allin to prevent him from eliminating Ricky Starks. And it's kind of like, well, but why? Right?
Right.
And then Swerve Strickland. Okay, I get, you know, once he turned on, I can't remember the second person. Was it Darby he turned on at the end of the match? Keith Lee and then Darby, was that right? Correct. Was Darby the second?
Oh, I thought you were talking to someone in the car.
Oh, no, my apologies. Remember. One of my friends was offering that. Yeah, okay.
Gotcha. I don't even remember. Jake, do you remember?
Was it the final four that he was asking about? I'm sorry.
There was a couple points in the match where Swerve Strickland threw over a someone you assume. Well, he threw over Keith Lee. Keith Lee. And then later, there was another babyface helping him that he helps eliminate.
Darby Allin was the one he dumped out.
Okay, that's
what
I thought.
Got the big crowd reaction.
Right. Yeah, but it's kind of like, again, it's like, all right, I mean, you know, opportunistic, I'll turn on them. Okay, but I don't know. I mean, wait till later in the match. I mean, even if you were totally amoral and you were just like, I'm just in this opportunity of getting as far as I can, why turn on your allies before you're some of the finalists in the match? Yeah. That didn't really seem to make a lot of sense to me. So anyway, I mean, those are, you know, not that AEW, I'll put it this way. I hold AEW booking in many ways in such high regard that when there are logical lapses like that, it bothers me.
Yeah, and it's fair too. I mean, high IQ producers and head bookers and certain, you know, people in the circle of influence should be watching a show and pointing that stuff out, and there should be internal memos going, hey, when we book up Battle Royal next time, let's make sure that we don't do this because it didn't make sense. And don't be overly hard on yourself, but you should be constantly looking to improve and internally making note of it and you know, having a way to improve over time kind of built into your week-to-week structure and not make the same mistakes week after week or, you know, three times a year when you do Battle Royals. And I mean, the smarter the product is, I think, in every way, the better off you're going to be, and you don't have to sacrifice anything to correct the illogic of what you're pointing out, Alex.
Yes, right. Thank you. But yes, I agree on that. I was just curious, were there any other sort of – yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so who got the biggest reactions of the night? Who were the biggest stars? If you brought someone to the show, hadn't been to AEW before, and they were taking notes, who would they be telling you they think the biggest stars were tonight based on the crowd reaction and their performances?
I'm curious if it came across differently on TV. I would say that Jon Moxley and Hangman Page probably got the biggest reactions of the night in the arena.
Yeah, I certainly would have had Moxley high on my list. I don't know if Paige would have been the second person that I came up with, but now that I think about it, I'm not sure he wouldn't have been. Jake, how about you? How did it come across on TV to you?
You know, it seemed like that, and I don't know if it was just my feed on YouTube TV, but it seemed like there was some weird audio mix issues throughout the show where, particularly in the first hour, like the crowds were a lot hotter than the even the announcers for me. Like I think I mentioned earlier, like, I could hear people in the first couple of rows, like, coughing and murmuring to each other. And it was very odd. So I might not be the best – I might not have had the best experience to tell you who came across the best on TV. But I think it would probably be the two that were mentioned, and maybe Adam Cole would be the ones who got the biggest announce, you know, in terms of entrance music pop. That would be my guess.
Alex, how did what kind of reaction did Wardlow get? Thunder Rosa, and I'm trying to think who I was also going to bring up as a comparison. I guess maybe that's it. Yeah, like how did those two come? I guess Pac too. How did they compare to each other? Because three very big faces there, but all have their own, you know, more than pockets of fans.
If I was putting them in terms of level of reaction, I put them in the order you gave them there. So it went Wardlow, Thunder Rosa got a lesser reaction than him, though still notable. I didn't think Pac got a very big reaction. And that was kind of noticeable to me, you know, Tony Khan a couple times, and I assume this was off television, but brought up, oh, Kansas City, this was where Kenny Omega wrestled Pac. And, you know, the idea that maybe there's, oh, you know, a residual memory of that. And, you know, a certain number of fans, you know, pop for that. It's like, oh, yeah, we were here for that match. But I don't think it translated. My impression was it didn't translate to Pac getting a big reaction when he came out. Wardlow got a very sizable reaction. And then it was funny, just, you know, when it was, I think, at that point, a commercial or something, Wardlow just exiting the ring kind of did a little, like, thank you, you know, motion to the crowd. And it actually stuck with me because I was like, oh, he just seemed, like, super likable. Just it's weird, like it, almost like, oh, okay, he's letting his guard down slightly. He's being just genuine, right? And it's like, oh, he's extremely likable when he did that.
That's interesting. That's interesting. There a match or a segment that lost the audience tonight during the Dynamite program? We'll get to some with a spoiler warning, some Rampage notes from you in a moment.
I think the Thunder Rosa match. My recollection was that Marina Shafir did not just, I mean, people didn't really react to her. I don't know if it came across like that on TV, but people in the arena didn't really seem to know who she was. And there may be another match I'm forgetting about, but that seemed to get the least reaction of any match of the night. I didn't think it had a bad reaction exactly, but more just people didn't really seem to react in any way to indicate that they thought Marina had a chance of winning.
Sure, sure. Jake, do you want to ask a question of Alex?
I guess just to follow up on Marina Shafir, her entrance seems really poor for television. Like, it's like this very sort of dour, melodic music, and she entered with low energy. And on television, like, I couldn't see anybody reacting in any meaningful way. And then they cut to like some Kansas City Chiefs, I think their offensive line was in like the front row, and they had these looks on their face like, who the hell is this? Like, it was a very, very strange way to introduce Marina Shafir. Was it as dead as it appeared on TV, like during her sort of, I guess it was piano or symphony music? I can't quite remember what it was.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Jake. It was 100%. It was dead when she came out. And so if anything, that stands out to me more. I mean, in the match itself, I don't remember people reacting big to her, but what stands out the most, I'd say, is, yeah, there was just silence when she came out for her entrance. You know, a few people recognized her, but, I mean, almost no reaction whatsoever.
And I guess the only other question I had was during the – you know, they had the segment with Trent Beretta and FTR, and then eventually Will Ospreay and his New Japan United Empire crew. Like, you mentioned that Ospreay got a good reaction. Did you get the impression that anybody in the audience knew who any of the other people were that were with Ospreay? Because I think the announcer said their names once, and it didn't look like many people were reacting to what was happening in the ring at that point.
No. That's a good question. No. I think Ospreay got the reaction. I did not, for what it's worth, right? I mean, we're talking a small sample here, but just nearby me, I heard murmurs about Ospreay, you know, oh, Ospreay, blah, 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 you know, but I don't think that Aussie Open or Hanare, that people generally knew who they were, no.
Alex, let's As I mentioned to you, I've got to wrap up a little. I don't have as open-ended of a window here to do the show as I usually do, so we're going to be wrapping up. And I want to have time for Javier here, too, before the top of the hour. But that said, can you let us know if there's anything else from Dynamite that stood out? And if not, you can move on with a spoiler alert to our listeners who want to just fast forward maybe 3 minutes. Tell us what happened on Rampage and anything we can look forward to or anything particularly newsworthy coming out of that.
Yeah, the only other thing on Dynamite is that probably is only of interest to me, but Hangman Page, when he drank a beer, that was my friend Sarah's beer that he took out of her hand to drink. Rampage spoilers. So the main event was Ospreay and Aussie Open against Trent and FTR. Great match. And FTR won. Trent got the pin. I can't remember. He pinned somebody in Aussie Open, I believe, to end the match. Aaron Hanare was at ringside and was fantastic at ringside in terms of, you know, a managerial type role. Saddam Singh and Jay Lethal, yeah, faced the besties in the world, independent tag team. I don't think Justin Roberts gave their team name, and it was a squash. You know, Saddam Singh, I'll be eager to see how it came across on TV. I thought he moved fine in the ring. He seemed intimidating. I mean, like, again, my impression at least was there was a buzz about, like, hey, you know, not necessarily everybody knew who he was, but people were impressed by his size and physicality. Well, you
That's
know,
good. Yeah.
Physicality may be stretching it. Well, yeah, I know. That would be a big compliment, right? Oh, if he came across as very physical in the ring. He came across physical enough, but he was very thick. Right, I mean, you know,
yeah.
People react
better than Omos out of the gate. You're saying?
I think that's fair. Yes, yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair.
Cool.
And then go ahead.
No, I was gonna say then. Yep. What else happened?
Oh, Eddie Kingston and Jake Hager really got the crowd into it. I thought it was a very good match, and Kingston won. And I'm trying to, you know, at some point it becomes all kind of a blur. I'm trying to remember if there's any other Rampage matches. Were there any other matches that they announced that you recall?
Let me, Jake, is there anything else? I'm going to run down the lineup here. I'm going to bring it up. Well, here he said, Red Velvet, Statlander, FTR, Beretta, United Empire, Jake Hager, Kingston, Satnam Singh in action, and Hook and Danhausen would talk. That was what they plugged.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so Hook and Danhausen, when that was announced during Dynamite that we'd hear from them at Rampage, that got a big reaction, but it was just a quick, you know, it was a quick backstage segment type of thing. It was, you know, ha-ha comedy. I mean, yeah.
They
did come out to the ring after the show. You know, so if people, I mean, they did come out to the ring, so people got to see them in the ring after the show. Red Velvet and Chris Statlander, good match, and Statlander defeated Red Velvet. And then afterwards, Kira Hogan attacked Statlander. Anna Jade came out. Jade got involved. And then Athena came out and was held back from getting into the ring. But Jade and Jade's, you know, baddies did not back down. They were calling for Athena to get in, but officials held Athena back.
Two quick questions on things. How many people stayed around to the end of Rampage, and were there any MJF chants at all during the night?
No MJF chants. There were quite a few MJF, you know, the Burberry scarves, or at least knockoffs of them. My wife says they were knockoffs of the one she saw. But, you know, there were scarves in the audience. I feel like a decent amount of people. I didn't file out, you know, until I was one of the people filing out after the little segment after the show. Trent and Danhausen and Hook and FTR were in the ring, you know, and did some, you know, kind of cute comedy. I feel like at that point, I don't know, I'm maybe half the crowd was still there, something like that.
Alice, is there anything else you want to bring up before we let you go?
No, I was trying to think. Tony Khan, he did mention a few things. He mentioned, you know, I don't know if he says this at every city, but he said Kansas City will be, you know, a regular place for AEW going forward. He said that FTR would wrestle at Ring of Honor. He suggested we'd be coming back to pay-per-view this summer, and FTR would be on the pay-per-view. And he said that FTR also, he suggested be wrestling on Forbidden Door.
Okay. Yep, that seems logical. And
yeah.
He does maybe say that in almost every city. Right. I mean, there's a decent crowd.
I'm shocked. Yeah, that what, Kansas City, the 30th or 35th biggest metro in the country that we're not special. I'm shocked.
Alex, thanks so much. I would press you for more details, but like I said, we got about 5 more minutes, and I want to get to Javier here before we got to go.
No, wait. Thanks so much for having me on. Take care.
Great. Appreciate it. You bet. If you want to be an on-site correspondent, email the show, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com, and let us know what show you're going to, Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and I'll be in touch and set up having you on. Okay, we have at least enough time for the Javier. But not the whole thing. Javier, how's it going?
How's it going? I got 5 minutes. All right, so let's hit the ground running.
Yes, yes. No, I know. I feel bad. Alex was, the Rampage ran long. We didn't get to bring Alex on soon enough, and I didn't want to forgo him, but I did promise my post producer I'd be done by the top of the hour. So I want to abide by that pretty close.
Yeah. I'm not going to. Okay, overall, I do want to say something positive about AEW. It's been pretty much everything
please
negative.
Please do, yes.
if there is a show that is coming, you know, that I'm going to go watch, it's AEW. Because the in-person experience, even, you know, since you're not really paying attention to any of the storyline, pretty much, and it is worth watching it. You know, the wrestling and stuff was great. Now, the package that was wrapped around it was horrible. Very frustrating episode. There's a lot of things that I've disagreed with you on. Sometimes, you know, on one of these calls, sometimes I just let it slide by because it's a question of taste. So, you know, there's no
how I lash out, and you know how I'd lash out at you if you disagreed with me and made a good point.
The thing is that, like, I was frustrated because, like, they made me look like a dumbass. Because, you know, like the whole thing, like I don't find it as bothersome, the, you know, side content stuff, because a lot of stuff is stuff that you can pretty much fill in the blanks yourself, you know, just using logic, you know, or you know, if it's that important to you, you've got Google, stuff like that. But when you're when your AEW champion is, you know, injured and he's doing this on Rampage, which has 49% of the, I think I did the math right, 49% of the ratings of Dynamite, it makes no sense. And particularly the way that they didn't really, I mean, this was the show that you started with clips of him winning the title at Double or Nothing, and then the injury, and then him turning in the belt, and you set up the actual Battle Royal, which is supposed to be an important thing because it's going to be part of determining your champion, and make that Battle Royal feel more important. That's more important than just starting off, you know, fast like he wants. Plus, you know, we mentioned before how WWE, like, you know, it gets pedantic in how they basically replay everything over and over and over again. But the middle ground, we keep talking about the middle ground, that middle ground is called reinforcement. You don't have to hold somebody and show you exactly what happened and play the entire skit, you know, back, but do something to reinforce that. So, you know, and that was necessary. One of the things I actually want to talk about, because I liked it on Monday Night Raw, was the fact that when you had the beatdown of Cody Rhodes, they went into the next segment after the commercial still talking about it and reinforcing it because it's an important thing. And you knew that was one of the most important things on the show. They need to do that because, you know, so it's just, you know, it's that. So anything on that?
I agree. And it is a specific example of something that would be did well, that it'd be good for Tony Khan to sit back and take it in and decide if there is a vast middle ground where he can reinforce some things.
And as far as the belt thing, I'm just going to let my brother chime in on this. He actually texted me like a minute ago. You know, at this point, a casual viewer would be confused as bleep watching AEW, every segment included, someone walking out with a belt.
I haven't even read all the emails we got on this. Like, John from Tennessee, I'm okay with adding another mid-card title, and I assume still the six-man titles at some point, but right now it's way too much with all these other titles. It doesn't seem like there's much interest in ROH, so these titles need to go. Also, the Owen Hart Cup winners getting belts are fine, but those have no place on TV afterwards. You can't have every other person who comes out wearing a belt, right? And then he also gave a shout-out to the NXT post-show people for doing a good job. So he said that crew did a great job breaking down that card. So that's the feedback we're getting on this, and your brother and our callers. It felt like a parody, Javier, today.
Oh, I literally laughed when I saw that because I thought they were introducing the trios title.
I'm
waiting to see the third one. I'm waiting to see them to cut to the second one because they do a quick cut to another angle. I'm thinking that's the second belt, and then I'm expecting them to show the third one. I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on? And then they go, and then we're going to have a tournament for this, you know, because then I hear Atlantic, North Atlantic Treaty Organization or whatever it is they're calling it, title. And I'm like, wait a minute, why would you call that, you know, and I'm thinking like, I'm flashing to New Japan who has the NEVER title. Thinking, is that how they're going to do it? They're going to call it like a different kind of, but nope. And I'm like watching this and I'm like, my one hope is that this is not a title that's defended in the U.S., and this I think this might be a title that whoever the Japanese New Japan wrestler is going to be the one who ends up winning it, and it'd be like a title in Japan, because I believe I may be completely wrong, but I think wasn't there a WCW title in Japan that was defended in Japan?
Oh, man. Was there, Jake?
I think there was, but I'm drawing a blank on what the actual name of it was. But there was a WCW title that was defended in Japan. I don't know if it was exclusively, but it was defended there multiple times. I can try to Google it if you're going to continue the conversation.
Well, I tell you what we can Google at the same time is Japan surrounded by the Pacific Ocean or the Atlantic Ocean? Javier.
I believe that would be the Pacific Ocean.
So let's call the title that is based in Japan. Let's call the title based in Japan the All Atlantic.
Yeah.
That was fast. WCW International Heavyweight Championship.
That's right. Yes. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So I'm thinking it'll probably bounce between that and probably Rev Pros most likely. One thing that the caller brought up, which is going to be a new topic, the caller brought up, which was the way they introduced Ospreay and Aussie Open and Hanare. It now makes more sense if you take the show into account as Dynamite and Rampage being a 3-hour show, as opposed to being a two-hour show and a 1-hour show. And I have felt about this occasionally before where once you factor Rampages as if it were a third hour, some of the stuff that happened in the first 2 hours kind of makes more sense. And I don't think that Tony Khan's been too, like, paying attention to that and realizing that he's producing two shows and not a three-hour show, because it makes more sense now that they would do that beatdown earlier in the show. And, you know, you see Ospreay come out and not tell you about who he is, because you're later in the show, you're going to have him wrestle and let that be what catches people's attention. Because he shows up, who the hell is this guy, leaves, you have no idea who the hell he is. But because he's showing up on that third hour and he's coming back to wrestle, you're like, oh, wow, he's an awesome wrestler. Let me look him up. He's interesting to me. And more, you know, so that kind of makes sense why that felt so flat on the way they introduced him, because it really felt like, you know, I think if you would watch Rampage right after Dynamite, the booking of that segment would have made more sense.
Jake, what do you think about that? I think that makes some sense.
Yeah, I think that's a good explanation for how Tony could have booked himself into that situation. But, ultimately, I think we'd all agree that it didn't make for a particularly good TV show in a nutshell. You know, if you're having to wait until Friday for a show that half your audience watches to get the necessary context to understand what happened on Wednesday, I still think that's a booking error.
Anything else you want to sneak in here, Rob, here before we wrap up?
And yeah, the last thing I did not like about that Jungle Boy Christian segment is the fact that Christian is the one who says, you know, introduces the idea of the match. And then Jungle Boy is like, he's the one who's like, but, you know, Daddy, I don't want to. It was, I don't think it was a good look for Jungle Boy, because I mean, at least from what I've seen, it doesn't look like Christian's been like a bad guy to them. So why would the babyface not want to, you know, meet up with the challenge? So that segment, unless I'm missing something, which is a possibility because I've only been watching Dynamite, unless I'm missing something in the relationship between those that group, why Jungle Boy would not, you know, say, okay, fine, you know, we could do this. Him saying, you know, the look that he gave of like, you know, oh, that's not, you know, cool. I didn't. You know, it's the idea is that Jungle Boy's going to take a baby face. I don't like the reactions he gets.
Jake, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree that it was a bit bizarre that, you know, that Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus looked so taken aback by the challenge. I mean, they did just walk into a room with two people claiming to be the next challenger for the AEW Tag Team Championships. And you know, Christian has been booking matches for them for the last several weeks. And so it was a bit odd that they looked very surprised. I don't know if Christian misspoke during that promo, too, because he, you know, I guess the Young Bucks and the Hardys both sort of made their case. And then he told them, you have to earn your tag team championships. And then he just went ahead and booked the match for next week anyway. I was very confused by the logic there. If that was like a mistake, or if he just misspoke, or it was a very odd segment for a lot of reasons.
A lot of reasons. Where were they, by the way? In a dorm room?
A hotel room, I was assuming. But
can we establish that? And can we, I mean, I know that, you know, sort of being the elite, which, by the way, remember when that was a thing that AEW, like, talked about? You think Tony Khan, I thought being the elite would be like a thing that was more incorporated into the AEW brand and narrative, but it feels like a being the elite thing. Oh, we're hanging out in a room with our with Brandon holding a camera, like, okay. Butler, what's his name, Brandon Cutler, and so, okay, but that's not established very well in the Dynamite canon. So why? And then what are the odds of everyone just being within earshot and showing up in time for a segment? It felt like amateur hour is too convenient and like a little too clubhouse. So besides the things you're pointing out, Javier, I just thought the premise was just kind of silly and lazy and, yeah, amateurish.
Yeah, I left that open for you because I knew you were going to go into that.
Yeah. Cool. I got to go. I really do. I will be in trouble with post-producer who's waiting for this. So, Javier, thank you. I appreciate it.
No, have a good night, guys.
Yep, thank you. That's all we have time for. Jake, thank you.
Thanks, Wade. Take care.
Hopefully next time we won't just be complaining about, you know, two or three major things that are wrong with AEW, and they'll have a rebound show.
There were so many things we had to complain about that we never got to. So, yeah, that was
yeah.
I'm just kidding. All right.
Thanks,
have a good
Jake.
Evening.
Take care. Yep. Thanks to our listeners, our outside correspondent Alex, our callers, our emailers, everybody, and of course the listeners.